Just the mention of the letter of the Hebrews makes Jeopardy fans like me twitchy. Any other Jeopardy fans in the... Oh, okay. All right. So y'all know. Some of us remember the great final Jeopardy fail of November 2022. It was the Tournament of Champions. The players were Amy Schneider, Andrew Hee, and Sam Buttrey. Category, the New Testament. Answer, Paul's letter to them is the New Testament epistle with the most Old Testament quotations. Sam Buttrey, what is Romans? Nope. Andrew Hee, what is Philippians? I guess he misspelled it. Nope. Amy Schneider, what is Hebrews? That is correct. I remember staring at my television with my jaw dropped. Why? Because first of all, the New Testament epistle with the most Old Testament quotations in it is Romans. Secondly, there is general scholarly consensus that Paul did not write Hebrews. The authorship of Hebrews is unknown. Of course, there are many theories as to who the author or authors are, but there's overwhelming evidence that Paul or even the lineage of Paul did not. Oh, Jeopardy failed me. And Twitter got busy right after that aired. I invite us today to entertain for just a minute that whoever wrote Hebrews, the ancestors collectively inspired Hebrews. The name says so itself, Hebrews. The letter even begins this way. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. Hebrews is about past faithfulness to inspire ongoing faithfulness. There are Old Testament, though the better term is Hebrew Bible or even Tanakh, allusions and references up and down, front and back in this letter as an invitation, especially to early Jewish or Hebrew Christians, to honor Jesus as the high priest in light of the temple being destroyed in 70 AD, and to draw strength from the faithful ancestors. This letter invokes the ancestors throughout, most notably in what many Christians call the Faith Hall of Fame in chapter 11. By faith, so-and-so did this, and by faith, so-and-so did that, and on and on and on, like a long time. Then when we get to chapter 12, it starts this way. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely. And let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. So by the time we pick up today in chapter 13, the last chapter in Hebrews, folks are still running the race, and I am pleased to say the ancestors, the cloud of witnesses, have not packed up and left. When we get to the guidance of Hebrews 13, they in the first century and we in the 21st century are in the palpable company of the ancestors. Let mutual affection come. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. Do not neglect to do good and share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. When Hebrews 13 speaks of entertaining angels, this is a reference to Genesis 18, when Abraham and Sarah tend to the angelic messengers who shared a promise from God that Sarah would miraculously birth a child even in her old age. This entertaining angels is not only an initial plate of food, there is mutuality. That first verse in our passage today speaks of mutual love, or some translations, mutual affection. What would it look like if we saw strangers, and by that today I mean immigrants and refugees, what if we saw them today as carrying a message from God, as individuals and people who have something distinctively divine to offer? What if immigrants and refugees have needs to be met, but also gifts to give? What if we actually need each other? What if these strangers, immigrants, and refugees do actually have the image of God within them? What if immigrants and refugees are part of the cloud of witnesses, testifying to everyone that the God of our ancestors is the God of today, and the God who led and moved with the ancestors still leads, still moves with immigrants and refugees today? If these what-ifs are true, if these what-ifs are what we really believe, what then would our individual practices be, our congregational response be, our state and federal policies be? Perhaps, generally speaking, colonial domination, historically and currently, have given us a case of amnesia, as if most of our ancestors were not immigrants and refugees too. Notice I said most. Not everyone in this place are descended from immigrants. I hate with passion that saying popular on well-meaning buttons and misguided protest signs, "We're all immigrants." We includes such a variety of circumstances. We're all immigrants erases the violent history of indigenous peoples who have always been here and are still here. We're all immigrants erases the violent history of many African Americans, many of whom their ancestors were dragged here in chains and forced into violent slavery. That is not immigration. That is kidnapping in the name of colonialism, which is a very visible manifestation of white supremacy and Western domination. And indigenous peoples, there was nothing new nor needing to be discovered in the so-called New World. European settlers, or squatters, if you like, are immigrants on this continent. No, we're not all immigrants. Those of us who do come from family lines of immigrants have a particular responsibility and opportunity, though, to welcome today's immigrants. Not because it is our land to give away, but because we generally, historically, when we choose to be honest about our history, know what it is like to be in a dire situation in need of a little kindness and hospitality. One problem, though, the concept of hospitality, especially related to immigration, still maintains a particular power structure. As nice church folk, we enjoy showing hospitality with good intentions in the name of peace and justice. This is beautiful, though hospitality means this is my house, this is my church, and I'm going to welcome you into my space. Hospitality does not require radical shared power and runs the risk of reinforcing oppressive structures and attitudes. It is precisely because of oppressive dynamics that most of us are here today, following the movement of our ancestors. Whether because of armed conflict or climate change or religious persecution or other forms of persecution, economic pressures, or so many other factors, most of us are here because our ancestors came here. Our ancestors shake their heads in shame when we collectively choose systems of violence over systems of mutual support. What an opportunity we have now to be active bystanders and bold protectors, however possible, when the lives and well-being of immigrants and refugees are threatened. One reason I am so passionate about this topic is because, generally speaking, my people, Anabaptists and Mennonites, historically know what it's like to be on the run, to preserve life, limb, and conscience, including at the hand of Lutherans. Since at least 1986, there have been formal and informal efforts to bring specifically the ELCA and Mennonite Church USA, that's me, together in dialogue. Specifically, the liaison committee was tasked to reflect upon ways to heal the memories of 16th century conflict, to examine the condemnations of Anabaptists found in the Book of Concord, to determine if they apply to Mennonites today, to discuss baptism and church-state relationships, and to identify other theological issues that might divide these two church bodies. It is by healing that we become healers. When we faithfully engage with the memories of the ancestors, we are invited to turn toward one another so that we can all more faithfully not neglect to do good, but to share what we have as a pleasing sacrifice to God. The summary report of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, Mennonite Church USA Liaison Committee, you know, church folk came up with that name because it's so long. The summary reports about 20 pages of historical and contemporary truthfulness. Section 26 says this: Lutherans and Mennonites recognize that we are inextricably woven into and beneficiaries of modern culture and society. Neither tradition proposes an isolationist relation between church and the world. Both traditions understand the deeply communal nature of human life and seek in their divergent ways to nurture communal practices that both reflect and represent the gospel to the wider world. May we, Lutherans, Mennonites, undecideds, and others, recent immigrants and refugees, multi-generation Americans, indigenous peoples, those with formal and informal power, those who are marginalized, may we, all of us, come together for the common good on this fragile earth, our island home. Blessed are the strangers, for they testify to the ancestors who were on the move, and the Holy Spirit who never stops moving.